Claire Anderson is at her breaking point. For 5 years, she's been running her late husband's media company while raising 3 boys on her own. The business is struggling, the bills are piling up, and now the ruthless Tristan Miles from Miles Media is circling like a wolf, ready to devour what remains of her husband's legacy. What starts as a hostile business meeting between enemies transforms into an unexpected connection that neither saw coming. The takeover by T.L. Swan has become a TikTok sensation and bestseller for good reason. It masterfully blends corporate intrigue with sizzling romance, showing how love can blossom in the most unlikely circumstances. Even celebrities like Jennifer Aniston have been spotted with this page-turner, which has resonated with readers seeking both escapism and emotional depth. Claire Anderson's world is crumbling around her. For 5 years since her husband Wade's tragic death, she's been struggling to keep his beloved Anderson Media afloat while raising their 3 sons. The company is running on overdrafts, staff are barely getting paid, and the vultures are circling. Specifically, Miles Media and their notorious head of acquisitions, Tristan Miles. When Tristan requests a meeting for the 3rd time in a week, Claire reluctantly agrees only to appease her friend and colleague Marley. At Bryant Park Grill, she comes face to face with the enemy. Tall, muscular, perfectly suited Tristan Miles with his confident smile and blazing sexuality. He gets straight to business, noting Anderson Media has been downsizing and running at a loss for years. His offer to take everything off her hands so she can take a hard-earned break feels like a slap in the face. When he smugly threatens that he always gets what he wants and can simply wait 6 months until liquidators move in, Claire's emotions boil over. Through tears, she reveals the company was her husband's labor of love, built over 10 years with dreams of passing it to his 3 sons. "I've already been to hell and back losing my husband," she tells him, before storming out. What Claire doesn't realize is that her passionate defense has left Tristan Miles completely captivated. For the first time in his career, he's been rejected, and he can't stop thinking about the beautiful widow who stood up to him. Against his better judgment, he calls her office and asks her to dinner, only to be shot down again. Intrigued by this woman who seems immune to his wealth and charm, he turns to Google, determined to learn more about Claire Anderson. 6 months after their disastrous meeting, Claire reluctantly agrees to attend a Master Your Mind motivational conference in Epernay, France. Her friend Marley insists she needs to change her mindset after 5 hellish years of grief and struggle. Gabriel Ferrara, an Italian media mogul who knew her late husband, joins in persuading her to go. Claire finally agrees, with Marley promising she can just enjoy the champagne and gourmet food if the conference proves boring. Before her trip, Claire takes a monumental step, removing her wedding rings for the first time since Wade's death. "You didn't die in the accident with him," Marley gently reminds her. "Live while you can." Though overwhelmed with emotion, Claire acknowledges it's time to move forward, even as she feels the emptiness on her finger. When Claire arrives at the luxurious Chateau de Makua for the conference, she feels out of place among the other attendees, but eventually meets some normal-seeming people, including Nelson, a computer scientist who seems equally uncomfortable. As the conference begins, Claire is horrified to discover the opening speaker is none other than Tristan Miles, the very man who tried to take her company. Their eyes meet, and Tristan falters momentarily before continuing his motivational speech. Unable to listen to this vile bloodsucker, Claire attempts to leave, only for Tristan to call her out by name in front of everyone. When she defiantly walks out anyway, he follows her to the corridor and publicly embarrasses her. Their verbal sparring resumes, with Claire reminding him she once called him a cold, soul-sucking bastard. Tristan turns the tables, suggesting she'll be begging that soul-sucking bastard to ask you back out one day. What begins as mutual antagonism quickly transforms into undeniable attraction. At a conference party, Tristan watches Claire all night with an intensity that stirs unexpected arousal in her. Though she tries to resist, their chemistry is electric. When he follows her to her room under the pretense of studying, the tension between them escalates as he pins her against the wall, whispering promises about what they could do together. During a conference truth circle, Claire reveals the devastating impact of her husband's death 5 years earlier. The truly heartbreaking part, she explains, is watching her three sons grow up fatherless, seeing their faces fall at Little League games when they remember their dad isn't there to witness their achievements. Looking up, she finds Tristan standing at the edge of the circle, his eyes haunted as he watches her, and immediately regrets sharing something so personal with him present. Later, during a wine tour, the electricity between Claire and Tristan becomes undeniable. After visiting 6 wineries, Claire notices Tristan sitting alone at a bar and decides to join him. Their attraction reaches a breaking point when he proposes casual, no-strings-attached sex. What happens on tour stays on tour. Claire agrees, seeing this as her chance to rediscover the woman she's lost since becoming a widow. In her hotel room, Claire confesses she hasn't had sex since her husband died. As Tristan gently undresses her, she feels embarrassed about her body's imperfections, the cellulite, stretch marks, and C-section scar. But Tristan touches these areas tenderly, assuring her she's beautiful, while admitting his own insecurities are internal rather than physical. Their first encounter is passionate but quick, with Tristan unable to hold back his desire. What was meant to be a one-night stand quickly evolves into something more intense. Tristan sneaks into Claire's room the following night, having secretly taken her key. Their chemistry is explosive, with Tristan proving himself extraordinarily skilled. As Claire puts it, she finally understands why she instinctively called him Tristan fucking Miles. The middle name was actually a verb. During their final conference day, Tristan unexpectedly announces he's leaving for Paris for an urgent meeting. Claire is devastated when he departs without acknowledging her, feeling used. But she soon finds a surprise bouquet of roses in her room with an invitation to join him in Paris for the weekend. After confirming her mother can continue watching her children, Claire accepts his offer and boards the company jet to Paris, acutely aware of the vast difference in their worlds. Claire and Tristan's weekend in Paris unfolds like a carefully choreographed romance film. They wander hand in hand through the Louvre, spending hours admiring the Mona Lisa's enigmatic smile and debating their favorite pieces in the Venus de Milo gallery. At the Eiffel Tower, they brave the winter chill to reach the summit, where Tristan wraps his cashmere scarf around Claire's shoulders as they gaze over the City of Light. Their exploration continues along the Champs-Élysées, where they window shop at luxury boutiques and share warm chestnuts from a street vendor. The charred ruins of Notre Dame Cathedral prompt a thoughtful discussion about history and renewal. At Le Baratin, his cherished neighborhood bistro in Belleville, Tristan orders in perfect French, making Claire's heart flutter. The intimate setting, all flickering candlelight and vintage mirrors, creates the perfect backdrop for Claire's confession that this ranks among her most treasured days. His facility with French continues to entrance her, especially when he whispers translations of the menu's most poetic descriptions. The surprise Moulin Rouge tickets reveal his thoughtful planning, and during dinner, their flirtation intensifies until Tristan admits she's consumed his thoughts entirely. Despite being carried away by the romance, Claire's practical side keeps intruding with unwelcome reality checks. Their lives exist in parallel universes, his in the rarefied air of Manhattan's elite, hers in the suburban trenches of motherhood. The contrast becomes painfully clear upon their return to New York. While his chauffeur waits with a pristine black Mercedes, Claire trudges through the parking garage to her minivan, complete with crushed goldfish crackers under the seats. Their airport goodbye stretches into several passionate kisses, neither wanting to break the spell. His "text me when you're home" request carries a weight of genuine concern that makes leaving even harder. The fantasy shatters completely when Claire arrives home to familiar chaos. Her boys, muddy from soccer practice, launch themselves at her with enthusiastic hugs. The scene that greets her is pure domestic mayhem. Fletcher's well-intentioned but disastrous attempt at appliance repair has created a kitchen swimming pool, while her mother stands on the stairs, hair full of shampoo, demanding to know when the water will be back on. When Tristan appears at her office the next day, impeccable in his bespoke suit, Claire steels herself for the conversation she knows they need to have. She tries to frame their Paris weekend as a beautiful but isolated moment, a snapshot of what could never be. Her arguments are practical but painful. She's divorced with three children, juggling soccer practices and parent-teacher conferences, while he dates sophisticated 20-somethings who can jet off to Europe at a moment's notice. Though visibly stung by her rejection, Tristan's response reveals both his hurt and determination. Drawing close enough that she can smell his expensive cologne, Claire delivers what she believes is a kindness. You deserve someone whole, someone uncomplicated. His parting shot, "We're not over till I say we're over," carries equal measures of arrogance and promise, leaving Claire unsettled in its wake. When Tristan appears at her office the next day, impeccable in his bespoke suit, Claire steels herself for the conversation she knows they need to have. She tries to frame their Paris weekend as a beautiful but isolated moment, a snapshot of what could never be. Her arguments are practical but painful. She's divorced with three children, juggling soccer practices and parent-teacher conferences, while he dates sophisticated 20-somethings who can jet off to Europe at a moment's notice. Though visibly stung by her rejection, Tristan's response reveals both his hurt and determination. Drawing close enough that she can smell his expensive cologne, Claire delivers what she believes is a kindness. You deserve someone whole, someone uncomplicated. His parting shot, "We're not over till I say we're over," carries equal measures of arrogance and promise, leaving Claire unsettled in its wake. Claire's attempt to end things with Tristan proves futile as their attraction continues to draw them together. What begins as casual hookups gradually transforms into something deeper, especially when Tristan begins interacting with Claire's three sons, Fletcher, 17, Harry, 13, and Patrick, 9. In a surprising twist, Fletcher applies for an internship at Miles Media without realizing Tristan is his potential boss. During the interview, they're both shocked to recognize each other. Despite Fletcher's hostility, Tristan is impressed by his protective loyalty toward Claire, especially when Fletcher reveals he wants to learn how to take over Anderson Media so his mother doesn't have to work so hard. When Tristan visits Claire's home, he brings a complex model rocket that Harry, who Claire calls Harrison or Wiz, has been wanting. Though initially just a bribe, the rocket becomes a bonding activity, as Tristan spends 90 minutes struggling with the complicated instructions alongside the boys. Patrick, the youngest, who barely remembers his father, is particularly drawn to Tristan, while Harry remains suspicious and antagonistic. The situation escalates when Tristan dramatically announces to the family that he wants to be Claire's boyfriend, presenting her four choices and calling for a vote. Patrick enthusiastically supports Tristan, Fletcher reluctantly agrees, Claire plays along, but Harry stubbornly votes for Pilates Paul, losing to the majority who chose Tristan. Later that night, when it's time for Tristan to leave, Patrick becomes anxious about him driving home in the dark, fearing a drunk driver, how his father died. Without hesitation, Tristan agrees to sleep on the couch to ease Patrick's fears. In this tender moment, Claire sneaks downstairs and confesses to Tristan that she loves him a great deal, feeling a deep connection forming between them. Tristan's relationship with Claire's sons evolves in profound and unexpected ways, particularly with Harry, the troubled middle child who carries the heaviest emotional burden from his father's death. When Harry disappears one stormy night, Tristan leads the search effort, eventually finding him huddled in the local park. This incident becomes a turning point, revealing Harry's secret ritual, regular visits to his father Wade's grave, where he leaves cigars, his father's favorite indulgence. The boy had been carefully saving his allowance for months, choosing the exact brand his father used to smoke. In a deeply moving scene that Claire witnesses from a distance, Tristan takes Harry to the cemetery with fresh replacement cigars after discovering some had been ruined by rain. They share a quiet moment at Wade's grave, with Harry formally introducing Tristan to his father. The ritual becomes something sacred between them, Tristan teaching Harry how to properly light a cigar, sharing stories, and creating a space where grief and healing can coexist. As Tristan places his hand on Wade's tombstone, there's a silent acknowledgement of responsibility, a promise to care for the family Wade left behind. Claire, watching from behind a nearby oak tree, realizes Tristan has provided her sons with something she couldn't replicate, a masculine perspective on loss and the permission to remember their father while accepting someone new. Tristan's protective instincts extend beyond emotional support to fierce advocacy for the boy's education. When Harry's carefully researched space station project receives an inexplicably low grade, Tristan arranges a meeting with school administrators. During the tense discussion, he methodically presents evidence of the teacher's bias, including previous grading patterns and ignored accommodation requests. He also raises concerns about Patrick's unaddressed dyslexia, presenting research on appropriate educational support methods. When the administration responds with bureaucratic deflection, Tristan doesn't hesitate. He announces the boys will transfer to Trinity School, an institution known for its progressive teaching methods and comprehensive learning support programs. The family's dynamic transforms over 7 months, with Tristan seamlessly integrating into their daily lives. Even Muff, the notoriously selective family cat, who hadn't warmed to anyone since Wade's death, claims Tristan's lap as her favorite spot. The relationship appears idyllic until a fundamental conflict emerges. Tristan expresses his desire to legally adopt the boys after marriage, viewing it as a complete commitment to their family unit. Claire, however, recoils from the idea. Despite their deep bond, she sees legal adoption as an unnecessary risk, fearing it could give Tristan leverage to separate her from her children if their relationship deteriorates. This disagreement exposes their different perspectives on trust, commitment, and the nature of family bonds. Claire and Tristan's disagreement about adoption reaches a breaking point. During a heated argument, Tristan expresses his frustration. "You want me to live in Wade's house, with Wade's wife, with Wade's children? Where the fuck is my life?" He wants his own family, not to be a stand-in. When Claire still refuses the adoption, he says goodbye, reminding her his mother warned him she would never truly be his family. 9 days later, Fletcher calls to tell Claire that Tristan is leaving for Paris permanently. She rushes to the airport and finds him with 3 suitcases. She confesses she's been stressed about losing her business, but didn't want to appear weak. Tristan is shocked she never told him about Anderson Media's financial troubles, but remains firm. "If I marry you, I want to adopt the boys. It's non-negotiable." When Claire insists her love should be enough, he simply replies, "It isn't enough." Their confrontation at the airport reaches its emotional climax when Claire refuses to allow Tristan to adopt her boys, insisting he's trying to take over her family. Tristan is devastated. "Because I deserve my own family, goddammit, and I love them," he argues through tears, before walking away. Claire calls after him, but security guards block her from following as he disappears through the private doors. 14 days without Claire and the boys leaves Tristan hollow. Meanwhile, Claire spirals deeper into her pain. When Fletcher confronts her about her attitude, he reveals his belief that Dad sent Tristan for us from heaven. This revelation stuns Claire as Fletcher asks how she can't see what's obvious to all 3 boys. The situation reaches a dramatic crescendo when 13-year-old Harry and 11-year-old Patrick execute a risky plan that demonstrates just how deeply they've come to love Tristan. Using Claire's emergency credit card and their tech-savvy skills to navigate airline websites, they orchestrate an international escape to Paris. Their determination is fueled by an unwavering belief that Tristan belongs in their family, a stark contrast to their initial skepticism just months earlier. When they finally locate Tristan at his Paris office, the boys burst through security, causing quite a scene among the startled French executives. "We want you as our dad. We don't care what Mom says," Patrick declares, his voice trembling but resolute. Harry adds, "You can't just walk away from us." Though initially shocked by their dangerous solo journey across continents, Tristan's heart swells with profound emotion as they cling to him. These boys who once viewed him with suspicion, now risking everything to keep him in their lives. Claire and Fletcher arrive hours later on the next available flight, having been beside themselves with worry. Claire appears transformed by grief, pale, tearful, and visibly thinner, her usual composed demeanor completely shattered. In the privacy of Tristan's office, overlooking the Seine, she breaks down completely. "Whatever you want me to do, wherever you want me to live, I'll do it," she begs, her hands trembling as she reaches for him. "Just don't leave me again." Tristan pulls her close, promising they'll build their future together, adoption papers or not. The story culminates on a snowy Christmas Eve in Aspen, with snowflakes drifting past the window and the boys positioned as co-conspirators. Tristan creates an elaborate proposal involving a treasure hunt throughout their mountain home, ending beneath the towering Christmas tree. After Claire's tearful yes, she shares her own life-changing news. She's 2 months pregnant. Tristan stands speechless, remembering their conversation months ago about wanting children together. Claire's eyes sparkle as she tenderly reminds him, "Be careful what you wish for, Mr. Miles. Now you have 4. The final piece falls into place 2 weeks later when Tristan makes the bold decision to resign from Miles Media, the company he's helped build for over 15 years. He hands his brother Jameson his resignation letter in their father's old office, explaining his plan to take over as CEO of Anderson Media alongside Fletcher, rebuilding the company for Claire's sons. Jameson is incredulous, pacing the room as he calls it madness to leave the family empire. But Tristan stands firm, his priorities crystal clear. "I'm going to run my son's company for them." When Jameson demands to know when he'll return, Tristan's answer reflects his complete transformation from corporate titan to devoted father. "When my boys are men." The takeover transcends its initial premise of a corporate acquisition, evolving into a profound exploration of how love infiltrates and transforms lives in ways no business strategy could predict. Tristan Miles enters the story as the archetypal ruthless CEO, all sharp suits and sharper business tactics, seeking to dismantle Claire Anderson's struggling media company. However, his carefully constructed world of mergers and acquisitions crumbles when faced with Claire's unwavering spirit and the disarming authenticity of her 3 young sons. Claire Anderson's journey is equally transformative. As a widow managing both a failing company and 3 grieving boys, she initially views Tristan's presence as a threat to everything she holds dear. Her fierce protection of Wade's legacy, both the company he built and the family he left behind, stems from a deep-seated fear that moving forward means letting go. Through her evolving relationship with Tristan, she discovers that love isn't a finite resource to be rationed, but rather an expanding force that enriches all it touches. The formation of their blended family showcases the intricate dance of emotions that occurs when past and present collide. The boys, especially 12-year-old Fletcher, 9-year-old Carter, and 6-year-old Bennett, navigate their own complex journey. Their initial resistance manifests in various ways. Fletcher's protective hostility, Carter's quiet withdrawal, and Bennett's confused attempts to understand where Tristan fits in their family narrative. Each milestone, from shared baseball games to homework help to midnight comfort during thunderstorms, gradually builds bridges between Tristan and the boys. Fletcher's pivotal realization that Dad sent Tristan for us becomes the emotional cornerstone of the story. This innocent yet profound observation helps the entire family reconcile their past with their present, suggesting that love can honor memory while embracing new beginnings. The boys' gradual acceptance of Tristan moves through distinct phases, from reluctant tolerance to genuine appreciation, and finally to authentic love, mirroring real-world challenges many blended families face. Tristan's character arc culminates in a decision that demonstrates the story's central theme: true love demands sacrifice. By choosing to walk away from Miles Enterprises' billion-dollar empire to rebuild Anderson Media, he proves that his priorities have fundamentally shifted. This isn't just about saving a company, it's about preserving a legacy for the boys he's come to love as his own. His transformation from corporate raider to family man illustrates how love can reshape even the most hardened priorities, turning hostile takeovers into acts of preservation and care. The story's resolution powerfully demonstrates that life's most valuable acquisitions aren't measured in market shares or profit margins, but in moments of connection, trust, and unconditional love. Through their journey, both Tristan and Claire discover that real wealth lies not in what we possess, but in whom we choose to share our lives with. And sometimes, the greatest corporate takeover story is actually a tale of hearts being captured one family dinner at a time.